This is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm going to start a new series called Last Week in Review. I'll explain. Well, it's been a minute, as the kids say, if they even say that anymore. As many of you know from listening to past podcasts, I've been doing my Zoom classes. I teach 8 classes a week, international classes. And I say that not to boast, but to take a moment to talk about how interesting it is as a teacher, as a coach, to be able to work with actors from around the world at the same time. Because the thing you see is that all acting issues, problems, concerns, you know, are all the same. It doesn't matter where you're from or, you know, what that school of thought is over there. It always breaks down to the same thing. And I find that interesting. I also just love, of course, the mix of accents and, you know, locales and weathers and things we hear about. It's just a joy. It's been a lot of fun. And so I do, obviously, a lot of talking about acting during the course of the week, and I haven't been on the podcasts, but recently I realized that I could very easily do podcasts during the week, even with the schedule, because I could make notes from various sessions of things that we went over that day or things that came up that I found very interesting. And then make them a part of an ongoing series. So that's what this one is. This is the first one. And so for all of you tightwads and sad asses that haven't found your way to my Zoom classes yet, here are moments that I will share with you from the training. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. Here are moments I'll share with you in the training week to week. And, you know, things that I learned from the classes and thought would be interesting to talk about. So the first one I'm going to talk about today is this idea, and I've discussed it many times. I might even have a podcast on it, but about the need to rehearse a scene before you let people see it and how I think that's absolutely nonsense. And I got to thinking a lot about it because of some scenes I watched in this past week and how they worked out. So a couple of actors did a scene from Mindhunter, and really great scene, you know, first season of it, what wonderful writing. And one actor's in Toronto and the other actor is in the UK. And they're doing the scene for the very first time across Zoom. And it was really spellbinding. It was really in a very simple, straightforward way, but it definitely had all our attention. And so it made me think about this as a first topic, about this idea of rehearse and the fact that you don't need to. I mean, think about that. One of the actors is in Toronto and the other one's in the UK, and they're doing it over Zoom, and it's the very first time. And it really was entertaining. And, you know, if you happen to be listening, you guys, you know who I'm talking about, you still need me, okay? You haven't graduated, so just calm down. And it made me think about this. It made me think, and I know I brought it up immediately too, is that how this is a policy here at this, you know, the way the real life actor works. It is a policy, and just how simple it is really to pull it off. Now let's think about that, and that's what this topic's about. So I know there are actors out there that say, no, but, you know, listen, I just, you know, I like to try and get a feeling, you know, just get a feeling of, and I think, why? A feeling of what? What? So you say, well, you know, I like to get my lines, you know, okay, we'll practice with someone else. Yeah, but I like to, you know, the rhythm of the person, this is the point. One of the comments that the chap from the UK made was that he had no idea. Well, he had a different idea of how the other actor was going to do the scene. You know, in short, the actor in Toronto that played the sociopath killer was really just kind of calm and very straightforward, and it was a little unnerving. I think that's one of the reasons we were so interested in it. It was just such a simple thing, and the chap in the UK said that really you know, got him on his back foot, and he, you know, was just trying to deal with it, and it kind of creeped him out just a little bit. And then I thought, yeah, you see, this is it. Optimally, this is what you want to have happen. You want to be able to get up there for the first time in front of the director and have that be, if you will, a virginal experience. You have no idea what the other person's going to do, and they have no idea what you're going to do. This is the best way to capture a certain type of lightning in a bottle. Now, you could say, well, what is the difference between that rehearsal in front of the director and maybe a rehearsal, you know, out in a hallway somewhere before we go to the director? I mean, where's the harm? Here it is. A few things are at play when you go off and you rehearse in a hallway. One is, while you're rehearsing, it's different, man. You have different monitors going on because you know you're standing in a hallway. And you know, while you're kind of going forward, you're also paying attention to what you're doing because, after all, you're hoping to gain some sort of insightful knowledge from this run in the hallway you're going to do before you get out in front of the director. So your manner of awareness is different. It just is, man. You're clocking in a different way what the other person's doing. You're thinking a little about yourself because you want to be kind of aware of what you did. Do you like this? Do you like that? Oh, look what he did. I didn't know he was going to do that. Now, in this particular instance, the UK actor, if had the opportunity to work with the Toronto actor in the hallway, might then go, oh, wow, I didn't know he was going to, you know, and have this reaction. Now, you know what happens? From that knowledge right there, the actors take that knowledge in, this new awareness, you know, of kind of what it could be, probably is, may be, and they take it in, and then they try and essentially, without meaning to, recreate it for the director. I mean, after all, wasn't that the purpose of meeting in the hallway and having this underground rehearsal, right? And you know what happens? It changes it. You're offering us something that, you know, without meaning to or not, you pre-baked it. Now you're feigning a similar response that you had the first time you saw the other fellow do his thing. And you see that there's something that just spoils it. What is the difference when we do it in front of directors and, you know, in the proper spot in front of the coach, whatever? You have a different awareness because the monitors that you have on, you know, with extra energy when you're on your own, you, A, don't need those as much. You're not thinking about it because now's the time to let the ball fly. And you just have, it's a different thing. You know, it's showtime. And the actor just behaves differently when it's like, now time to do it. Show me what you got. Something different occurs. I really think it's very important for you to do everything you can to preserve an opportunity for those kinds of moments. And I remark on it. I say, look at that, guys. That's the first time you guys are saying the lines out loud. And, you know, that was a nice scene. I mean, if you did that on a set, I would think, well, we're on our way. What a beautiful place to start. What a nice way to acquire a skill, right? So that you get to the point that you can snap one off first time on the set. And you know what? It's definitely watchable. That is a good thing. And certainly that should be any actor's aspiration. But then you might say, yes, but once you've done it for the director, aren't you in the same spot now? I've seen what the other actor is going to do. I've had this completely organic, you know, reaction to it that seemed to be the exact right thing. It created an interesting dynamic in the scene. We've done it now. Now we have to repeat it maybe for the rest of the day or certainly for a few hours in a bunch of different setups, in a bunch of different takes. True. But it's been my experience that when you discover something in front of the director and, you know, the powers that be in front of the other actor with the other actor, it's somehow easier. There's something more magical about it when you're working, you know, there's you get more confidence because you realize you're on your front foot. It's all working out just right. And you don't question things and you're trusting your instincts more. And now, you know, now you're in the midst, you're doing it, and you're not having a lot of self-reflection and wondering as actors do in hallways as they try and sort these things out. The same thing happened that night in my evening session. Two people started a scene, went all the way through, and it was from Closer. And it was so captivating and almost hard to watch in its honest kind of brutality. And I thought, wow, look at that. Look at that. If that isn't a testament to the fact that actors do not need to over-rehearse, overwork, over-worry about this stuff. You know, if an actress says, well, you know, my lines, you know, I just need to get my lines. Well, get them. Who's stopping you? Why do you have to do it with the star? Why do you have to do it with the person you're working with? Go do it any other way you want. Come on. The thing that is the problem shouldn't be, you know, the fact that maybe when they say their line, I won't know what to say. We got to get over that hurdle, folks. Come on now. There's a lot of other dragons we need to slay in this business. One of them can't be, you know, I have a hard time with, you know, the whole lines and order thing. Which leads me to the question many of the actors that I train ask me, because they now become devotees of this way of working without rehearsing with your partner before you put it up for the powers that be. I get asked the question, well, what happens when you are working with an actor? Maybe it's a professional situation. And the other actor wants to, you know, work on the scene out there between the trailers before you go in and do it. I have a response for that, and you might want to get a pencil and paper so you can write this down and you can say it exactly the way that I think you should, and that's this. You say, no. That's what you say. You say, no. And you can be pleasant about it. I'm always pleasant about it. I say, you know, that's not really how I work. That's not my process. I'd rather just do it when we're out there. That if the person needs to run lines with someone, they can run lines with there's always a myriad of people around, other actors in the show. There's always people willing to help. And I've dealt with this, and the actor will say, yeah, but I don't want to be, so you want that person to spoil your process because you're worried about spoiling their process? Why is their process suddenly more important than your process? You know, I worked with John Patrick Shanley once. He's the playwright who won an Oscar for Moonstruck, and we did the West Coast premiere of Italian-American Reconciliation at my theater so many moons ago. And just in a discussion we were having about art and whatnot, I remember him saying to me, never let anyone fuck with your art. Pardon the blue language, but that's a quote. I never forgot it. I thought, you know, that's very good. You never have to be rude about keeping that from happening, but you need to do it. Don't let anyone spoil your process. If this works for you, then you just kindly say, I'd rather not. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's what you do, and that's what you need to do. That's the lesson. Learn it. Find this way of working. It'll be way more beneficial to you in the long run, I promise. The other thing I made note of during the week was the fact that I noticed that all the actors follow another thing that is part of my practice, and that is when you don't know your line, when you go up, if you do, when you do, you don't make any noise about it. The trick is, and this is really a part of etiquette, it's very important to me and I make a big deal about it, and so when I noticed how everyone to a person, even when they're struggling, you know, I can see them. They're looking now. They're trying to find their script, and they never say a word. What do I mean by a word? They don't say things like, "Oh, God, sorry, I had these. I just, you know, my cars are looking through the paperwork. It's just, oh, what is it? You know. Why? Oh, man, that's just a real mood killer. You know, we're listening. We're watching. We're into it, perhaps. Maybe this is going really well until that thing. And then suddenly you show us all the people behind the curtain. Suddenly realize we're being hoodwinked. Yeah, you're not really this person or anything. You're an actor, and now you can't find your lines, and you're making a big deal about it. Is it really important, that little magic, if we disrupt it? Yeah, it is. It is. Oh, especially for three people. The director, you know, come on. Maybe the director's in the mood, the director's watching, digging it, got ideas, and all of a sudden you kind of throw a little cold water on it by coming out and making a lot of noise and grumbles while you look for your line. The other actor, I'd be the second person, you know, they might really be cooking with you. And then they look at your face and you're all out of character, looking down, grumbling about how you had them in the car. You can't believe how stupid this is. Oh, I'm so sorry, everyone on earth. It's a mood killer and it's indulgent. And the third person is you. When I see an actor do that, I think, man, you're caring too much about that. Nobody cares. Here's what we care about. Get the line. Let's get back to it. We don't need your disclaimers. We don't need to hear you say you're sorry. We don't need any of that because it really does kill the mood. Let's forget about that. Let's assume you got a lifetime. We know you're sorry. So you never have to say it again. What we want you to do is just simply get that. Not only that, but you've disrupted your mind with this preoccupation. So you think with the need to have to apologize. You don't want that kind of garbage whirling around in your head while you're in the middle of a scene. Now you feel bad that you did this thing and, oh, I'm such an idiot head. You don't need to do that to yourself. It's counterproductive. So what you do is you just look down and you find it. I don't care how long it takes. And I've done this enough and I've spoken it enough that I know that all the other actors in the Zoom sessions are seeing it. They see the actor cover and go on. And it's immediately felt. You can feel it. You can feel like, oh, that's so much better. When they talk, it's like somebody, you know, scratched across a record. And when they don't say anything, it's cool. We all just hang. We know what's happening. And then it just comes back. And the magic isn't lost. And that magic's important. We don't need to indulgently interrupt that beautiful magic every time, you know, we have a little slip up. That was another thing that I saw this week that, you know, most of the time I just take for granted because it's a matter of course. That's just how I, you know, it's how the actors need to do it. And it seems kind of small, but when you see it at play, you realize how important it is. It really is. If for no other reason, but the fact that it's just easier for the actors to keep in their headspace, in that sweet groove. And if there's a sudden kerfuffle, we just want to stay in that groove, find out where we are and go. It's respectful. It's more respectful to yourself and everyone else on the set. It's a little thing, but it's a big thing. And finally, a couple of the actors asked me the question of the idea of look. How much does look have to do with it with regards to, you know, your career and it perhaps being helped along by the way you look, you know. Is there a more enviable look? Is there a way that, you know, do some looks, actors with certain looks work more than others? Is it easier for certain people because of the way they look? Which is a good question, and here's the answer. Yep. Yeah, sure, of course. Sure, I guess, you know. I mean, the industry is basically based on kind of a, you know, beauty. I mean, at the end of the day, if there was a number one thing, it's usually whatever society's decided is beautiful or sexy or interesting or hot. And generally, those people, you know, are at the top of the pyramid in most situations. You know, it's the way it is. I mean, they got to attract people to watch the thing. You want to turn on because you like the way this gal, that guy, you know, whatever looks. They go, oh, look at that. What a hottie. And we watch. Yeah, sure. So, you know, to a degree, I guess if you were hot, you know, or if you were just a beautiful person or something, you'd have that much more opportunity for when you walked in a room, immediately go, ooh. And then if you could act on top of that, I mean, if you could really act, well, then yeah, sure, of course, there would be that situation. But here's a problem with that, of course, is that the industry, for the very reason I just described, is going to have lots of people trying to sign up that are beautiful people. Lots of them, lots of them. In fact, since, you know, if they say, well, that's kind of what we want the most, you know, that can act, of course. Well, then naturally, anyone who's beautiful anywhere in the backwoods of wherever are going to think, hey, you know, they're going to say, boy, you're handsome. You should be an actor. And then that person's going to walk into town, and now there's a sea of these people. So if there's any downside, it would be that, well, now you've got a lot of competition, because part of what's going on is in this particular grouping of people, it's based on beauty. So you're one of the beautiful people, and so now you're in a bunch of people. Now are you more beautiful than this person, and who acts better? There's a lot of people there. So there's a downside. If you were unusual looking, then someone might say, well, you know, there's you know, what kinds of roles are you going to play? And then you could say, well, the unusual ones. And there might not be as many people that look in a same unusual fashion the way that you do. So now, while there aren't quite as many roles, perhaps, because it's a beauty-driven industry, there's probably less people trying because it doesn't seem as easy. And so then maybe your competition is less. So if you're a really great actor, they're looking at you for different reasons now, and they might be able to see past your looks for a moment, because that's not, you know, at the top of the list in your category of being a beauty king or queen. So, you know, things are different here. And if you were really unusual looking, well, you know, stories need really unusual people. And if you just think for a moment about the people that have gone on and become megastars who are unusual, or we're told, get out, you're never going to work, well, there you go. They work perhaps in a more narrow field of people, but there is a more narrow field of jobs available until they get a job, and you know what always happens. Once you become something that people like, well, then they just find a space for you in a lot of different movies. And suddenly a whole bunch of movies come out where they need a person that looks just like you because everybody likes you. Here's the bottom line. You look the way you look. I mean, unless, you know, you can gain weight or lose weight, or, you know, wear a wig or not wear a wig, or shave your head or grow a mustache, or, you know, get a nose job, or it's something you can actually change and you really want to, and you would actually think it would make a difference. You look the way you look. You look the way you look. You can't start thinking about, you know, what you don't have, or wouldn't shucks, wouldn't it be great if you look like her or him? You can't even do any of that stuff. We hire people that are attractive on many levels, not just the looks, but just personality, a feeling you have, their talent, their confidence. And aside from maybe honing what you think is the category you're in, whatever that is, whether it's like you're a beefcake, so let's make sure you're always beefcaked, or you're this, so make sure you're always that, or, you know, you're just looking after whatever the few little details are that you might need to look after. Aside from that, self-confidence, being sure of yourself, having talent, walking into a room and being the beautifully pleasant, lovely person that you are, and everyone seeing that, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, we're looking for the best people. At the end of the day, in any story, you need a variety of different looking people. Don't ever concern yourself with what look you may or may have had, or could have had, or should have had, whatever. Don't do any of that. You look the way you do. Figure out, you know, the types of things that you're probably going to end up getting the opportunity to do. You know, cultivate your skills. Walk into the room with your head upright and have confidence and use that easy charm that you have, and kick the shit out of the scene, or on Zoom, or however they're doing these auditions, or self-tape, whatever. Or when you do get a chance again to meet people, you know, that's what we do. That's what you got. No sense wasting time rolling that around in your head. All right, those are some observations from this past week. For those of you that haven't audited a class and have never checked it out, would like to see what it's like, I'm going to offer free audits, and I'll give you a little lead time, for the first week of March. So the first available day there is going to be Tuesday, March 2nd. And then for that week, I have classes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And different times, you can go onto my website at reallifeactor.com and click on the drop-down for classes, and it'll explain the schedule to you. And you can pick a class, and you can audit for free. And you can see what it's like. Okay, folks, that's what we got for this week. I'll be back in another week with more reflections from the previous week. And as always, thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Real Life Actor podcasts can be found on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic. Please tell your friends. Thanks for listening.